All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Ayin Beis 72. We are picking up Ayin Aleph Amud Beis 71b with Rav Ashi Amar, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 17 lines up from the bottom. So a lot to do today. So remember again, we left off in the middle of the very interesting sugya about the situation where, well, two different cases. Case number one is I borrowed money from a Gentile with interest. And then what happens? I'm on my way to pay back the money, and another Jew sees me, says, do me a favor, let me use the money, and I'll pay back the Gentile with the same terms that you had established. So remember again, the Gemara essentially said that Lemaisa, it only works if some, now actually the Gemara said that case is going to be mutter. The Gemara says, That case is Asr. The only time where it's Mutter is if I bring borrower number two in front of the Gentile, and whatever, either Gentile tells me to put down the money, he take whatever the Metzias was. Case number two, we saw yesterday. Case number two is the reverse case. I lend money to a Gentile borrower with interest. He's coming to pay me back. A Jew finds him. He says, hey, let me use that money, and I'll pay back silver with the same terms. So the Gemara suggested that ultimately that was Mutter. So we discussed the various intricacies of those cases yesterday. But the Gemara, we'll say, brought up a very interesting idea. So let's take a look at Rav Ashi Amar. So Rav Ashi Amar, ki amrinan ein shlichos lenachri. So we'll say, remember again, the reason why ultimately the second case worked is because we assumed this concept of ein shlichos lenachri. There is no agency on behalf of a Gentile. So remember again, that's why in the first case where I go ahead and I give the money to the second Jewish borrower, that lemaisa, again, it's considered as if I, the Jew, am giving the money, because I can't be acting on behalf of the Gentile, because there is no agency between a Jew and a Gentile. So the Gemara says, Rav Ashi comes to qualify that statement, and he says, ki amrinan ein shlichos lenachri. When do we say there is no agency for a Gentile? Hani mili b'truma. We'll say that's only when it comes to the separation of truma. However, aval b'chola Torah kuli ein shlichos lenachri, because ultimately, again, by everything else in halacha, there is shlichos by a Gentile. I both say, now you're going to see the reason why truma comes up is because of the following. V'had Rav Ashi berusahi. I both say, understand, this statement of Rav Ashi is mistaken. So let's analyze this. Mishnah truma dolo. So we'll say, let's go back for a second. Why is it that by truma, I can't appoint a Gentile to separate my truma on my behalf? Hey, this is a comparative matter case. I have a Jewish worker in my house. I want him to go ahead and separate out my truma. Why can't I do that? Because the pasuk says atem gam atem. Because we'll say the pasuk says the following. Remember, the pasuk Torah is quoting over here is kein tarimu gam atem trumas Hashem mikom asroseichem. So the pasuk says you shall go ahead and separate out truma from all of your crop. They're both saying, now, could it just said atem? But it also uses the word gam atem. Also, that gam is to include something else. What does gam come to teach me? Ma atem b'nei bris, just like you, meaning the Jewish crop owner, are a member of the covenant, meaning you're Jewish. Af shluchachem nami b'nei bris. So too, your agent must be like you, and your agent must be Jewish as well. So the Gemara says, and shlichos techala Torah kula, nami mitruma gamina. I both say, just an important halacha, we learn out the entire concept of shlichos from truma. Meaning truma is the paradigmatic case of shlichos. Truma teaches us that you could appoint an agent on your behalf to go ahead and do something for you. However, what truma also teaches us is that shlucho shel adam kimoso, that a person's agent is an extension of himself. Therefore, my agent must have the same status as I have. Therefore, just as I am Jewish, he must be Jewish as well. And this becomes the framework for agency in kala Torah kula. That's why, again, elad Rav Ashi berusihi. That's where Rav Ashi is mistaken. That's why Rav Ashi wants to say that it's only by truma that you can't employ a Gentile as an agent, but by the rest of the Torah you can. Rav Ashi is mistaken in that assessment. So says the Gemara, Ikedam, it was another version of this exchange. So Amar Rav Ashi, ki aminan ein shlichos lenachri. So according to this version of Rav Ashi, says the following, when do we say that there is no agency for a Gentile? Hani mili inhu lididon. We'll say that's, well, he can't be an agent for us. Aval anan lididohu, Havina luhushliach, but we can be a Jew, could be an agent for a Gentile. So the Gemara says, the Hadrav Ashi Berusihi, and just on the standard of Ashi's statement, is flawed. Maishna inhu l'didon delo. So we'll say, so for example, why is it that the Gentile cannot be an agent for a Jew? So the Gemara says, Dechsev gam atem gam atem, l'rabos shluchachem, because you're not from Truma. What do we learn from Truma? Ma'atem b'nei bris, just like by Truma, in order to have someone separate Truma on my behalf, he has to be a Jew. Af shluchachem b'nei bris. So too, your agent has to be Jewish as well. To which the Gemara says, Ravashi, this is why you're wrong. Anan l'didohu nami. Ma'atem b'nei bris ka'amar. So we'll say, so too, again, this is not just true in one direction, but this is true in both directions. Therefore, I can't, just like I can't go ahead and employ a Gentile as an agent, because again, he does not mirror my status. Therefore, I can't be an agent on his behalf as well, because I don't mirror his status. Ella, Had Rav Ashi Berusi. So therefore, Rav Ashi's statement and position is totally discounted and disregarded. So therefore, again, Rav Ashi, we are making, so there's one din for shlichos. There is one din for agency, and that din teaches me that a Gentile cannot be a shaliach for me, nor can I be an agent for a Gentile. So the Gemara says the following: Rav Ashi Amar, Nehid the Shlichos Lanachri Laslei. So it's true. Even though we've established that there is no shlichos, there is no agency for a Nachri, nevertheless, Zechia Midirabanan Islei. But Rav said there is a concept of Zechia. Zechiyah means that you could do something on someone's behalf, like Zachin la Adam Shalom Befanav. You could do something on someone's behalf, and they could be the beneficiary of that action. I will say now, up until now, we have always assumed that the concept of Zechiyah is a derivative of Shlichos. Meaning, if I go ahead and I'm walking on the street, and I find a $100 bill, and I say, oh, you know what? My friend Reuven, he collects $100 bills. Right? He collects $100 bills. Say, you know what? I want to acquire this on his behalf. Now, did Reuven make me a shaliach? No, he doesn't know about this. Does Reuven know about this? He doesn't know anything about this. I could acquire it on his behalf because of the concept of zachin la'adam shalom b'fanav, that you could do something of objective benefit for someone, even if they are not cognizant or aware that I am conducting this activity on their behalf. That's called zachin. So, Ravina says the following. Even though there is no agency for a Gentile, Zochin does apply for a Gentile. So for example, I can do something of objective benefit for a Gentile, and he could acquire it as a result of my activity. Look at Rashi for just a moment. A Jew could acquire on behalf of a Gentile. Therefore, we'll say the application of this for us is the following. Therefore what? Let's go back to our previous case. I can go ahead, I borrowed money from a Gentile with interest. I'm on my way back to go ahead and repay the debt, and what happens? Another Jew comes along and says, hey, can I use that money? And I'll borrow it at the same rates. What's Talach Rabo say? I can give that money to the second borrower. Why? Because I'm acting alt zechiyah. I am doing something of objective benefit for the Gentile. What's the objective benefit? He's getting more interest. And this, of course, presupposes that I know that he doesn't need the principal back, for argument's sake. I say, I'm doing something of a... So I'm not acting as a shaliach, because there is no shlichus between Jew and Gentile, but I'm utilizing the mechanism of zechiyah, which says that you can do something of objective benefit on behalf of someone else. The Gemara says, midi dehavi akatan. Because we'll say, in this respect, the nachri should be no different than the katan. Katan lav afagav deles leshichos tapavayin beis. Because we'll say, when it comes to a minor, even though a child is not shaykh to the concept of shlichus, islei zechiyah midrabanan. I will say, I can do something on behalf of a child that would allow a child to acquire something from the concept based on the framework of Zechiyah. There is no Shlichos, but there is Zechiyah. Hachanami Loshna. So too, by a Gentile, I should say that even though there is no Shlichos, there is the concept of Zechiyah. To which the Gemara says, Velohi. It's not a good comparison. I'll tell you why. Yisra Asilech La Shlichos, Akamo Asilech La Shlichos. What's a very simple distinction? Do you know why the concept of Zechiyah applies for a Katan? You know why? Because a katan one day will be in the parish of Shlichos. Zeh katan gadol yihya. Right? The katan is going to grow up. So when he grows up, he's going to be shaykh into our Shlichos. A Gentile will never be part of the parish of Shlichos. So both sides, what the Gemara essentially saying is the following. Zechiyah is an appendage of the framework of Shlichos. It's just a different kind of application. Therefore, it only applies to people who at some point in time will be connected to the framework of Shlichus. But someone who will never be connected to the framework of Shlichus, like a Gentile, has no concept of Zechiah as well. Tan Rabbanon. The Gemara goes through an additional case. Tan Rabbanon. Yisrael. I'll say another very interesting case. Shalav Amos Me'achri Beridis. So let's say, watch this case. I borrow money from a Gentile with interest. I'm Ein Beis, I'm with Aleph, four lines in. I borrow money from a Gentile with interest. V'zokfon alav b'milva. So we'll say, this is actually very interesting. Then what happened was, the loan itself was recategorized. Now what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. V'zokfon alav b'milva. La'achar zman chishev imo ala ribis v'zokif hakol b'yachad b'milva. V'kasa lo shtar leim kach v'kach ani chayav l'im. So we'll say, imagine the following. So imagine I borrowed from him $10,000, and there was let's call it another $50 a month of interest, for argument's sake. Then what happens? So the Gentile reclassified the loan, and I agreed to it, where we lumped everything into one principal payment. So we converted the loan from an interest-bearing loan into a larger loan that encompassed all of the interest payments, but turns it all into principal. Okay, so far so good, no changes. But now here's the chav, Vinis Geyer. Oh, he converted. I think, thanks a lot, right? Thanks a lot. It's actually, so this guy here, so he converts. So we'll say, now what's the shayla? The shayla is, what happens with this loan? Says the Gemara, in kodim shinis gayer zakfana lav b'milva. So I'll say, if ultimately again, before he converted, we converted the loan, before his conversion, the loan conversion took place, and the interest was transformed into principal, then goves, I can't goves rebis. I'm both saying, now the wording over here is a little bit misleading. Remember, essentially what the Gemara is saying is you could collect everything. You could collect everything. Why? Because everything is now considered to be principal. Okay. V'im la'achar sh'nizkar zakfan al b'milva. But I will say, if let's say again, when the Gentile converted, it was still an interest-bearing loan, and he only converted it into what we'll call a principal loan after the conversion, then what? Gova esakar v'ena gova esaribis. So I will say, in a case like this, you could collect the principal, but you cannot collect the interest. The chaynachri, let's listen to this. Reverse case. The chaynachri shalava ma'oz mi Yisrael. So to us, let's say I lent a Gentile money. Right? I lent the Gentile money. And what happens? With interest. V'zakfan alav b'milva. And I will say, then I, the lender, the Jewish lender, decided, you know what? To convert the entire debt into a principal, we'll call it a principal debt. Then what happens? V'niskayer. Now he converts. So im ad shalom niskayer zakfan alav b'milva. We'll say, so everything depends on when the personal conversion, the Judaic conversion, and the loan conversion took place. If before he converted, I transformed the debt into a principal loan, then I could collect the entire amount. We'll say, if only after he converted is when I transformed the interest-bearing loan into a full principal loan, then Goves HaKeren, Ve'ino Goves HaRibis. Then you could collect the principal, but you cannot collect the interest. But we'll say, watch this. Rabbi Yossi says, no. Nochri Shalava Ma'os Mi'iso B'Ribis, Benkach U'Benkach Goves HaKeren, Ve'Goves HaRibis. So we'll say, listen to this. Rabbi Yossi says that if you have a case of a Gentile who borrowed money from a Jew, and he borrowed money with interest, whether the debt was converted into a principal loan before he converted or after he converted, either way, the convert, the ger, has to pay the principal and the interest. He's got to pay everything. Why? Rabbi said, this is amazing. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Huna. Halacha Rabbi Yossi. Halacha was Rabbi Yossi. Why? Amar Rava, my time is Rabbi Yossi. Kadesh Shelo Yomru, B'Shil Ma'osav Nisgayer Zeh. Was that amazing? In order that people should not say that he converted in order to avoid paying interest on this debt. Now we'll say, here's what's amazing about this. So therefore Rabbi Yossi says, now remember, this Lav Dafka that Rabbi Yossi is referring over here to, first of all, it's a dramatic step to get out of interest, but okay. But in any event, influence of money, 100%. So what's really unfolding over here is the following. So understand, we'll have to see the scope of Rabbi Yossi's statement. Is Rabbi Yossi talking about any? Let's say I didn't convert the debt. Meaning, let's say again, I lend Gentile money with interest. I didn't convert the debt. He then converted as well. Would Rabbi Yossi still say that he has to pay the interest, or is it dafka in this kind of case where there was a debt conversion. So that we'll discuss in a little bit greater depth. The idea over here is, when it comes to Geirus Rav Osei, one of the things that we try to be especially careful about is that there should be nothing that should undermine the authenticity of the Geirus. It's the same way that when someone comes to convert, one of the first questions we ask them is, are you dating a Jewish person, right? Are you seeing a Jewish person? Sometimes it's, are you married to a Jewish person? Meaning that we have to be careful because, chas v'shalom, we don't want it to be that anything undermines the authenticity, ultimately, of the Geirus. So therefore, the Gemara says over here, Rabbi Yossi says, in order to go ahead and remove any suspicions that people are converting for some type of monetary gain to avoid the ribbis, the Rabbi Yossi says, if you convert, understand, you are still responsible for any interest-bearing debts you may have accrued during the course of your Gentile kite, and even after you go ahead and you convert to Judaism, you're still going to be responsible for them. Incredible yisod. Tan Rabbanan. Shtrel said, now, this is another very important halacha. Shtar shekasav bo ribbis. So let's say the following situation. Illegal interest. I lend Reuven money with interest. So I have a shtar, and in the shtar, what does it say? In the shtar, it says, I lent Reuven $10,000, and just to keep it easy, right, there's interest of $50 a month, for argument's sake. So what happens? We'll say, I have the shtar. So this is what's called the shtar shekasav ribbis, the shtar that has ribbis written into it. So we'll say, obviously, the collection of the ribbis is illegal. But what's the shayla? So shayla is this document usable or not? Right, for the principal. Right, I know I can't use it to collect the interest. Can I use it to collect the principal? I will say, now, remember, this is important because there is a difference in the strength of a loan that is recorded in a document versus a milva al peh, versus a loan that is simply a verbal transaction. So now what we're asking over here is, I have a shtar that has something illegal in it. So does that totally just discount the entire shtar? It's a piece of garbage. I just go ahead and tear it up. It has no use. Or I can't collect the interest, but I absolutely can use it for the principal. That's what we're going to see. So Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, shtar shekasu bo ribis. If you have a shtar that has ribis written into it, konsin oso ve'ino gova lo asakaren ve'lo asaribis, the Rebbe Meir. So most of the Rebbe Meir is of the opinion that the rabbis slap you. They slap the lender, and they say, if you used this document for a principal and interest payment, once it's no good for interest, it's also no good for principal. You cannot use it to collect principal. That's Rebbe Meir. The chum say, gova asakaren, ve'ino gova asaribis. The chum, on the other hand, say, no, you could go ahead and use it to collect the principal, but you cannot use it to collect interest. So we'll say Chachamim hold that it's still good for principal collection. So Michael Mephthys, we'll say, so what are they arguing about? Rabbi Meir Savar, Kansinan Hetera Mishum Isura. So what Rabbi Meir says, that this is a penalty. This is a penalty. We penalize the lender that he can't even collect a permitted part of the debt because of the prohibited part that he wrote into the debt. So it's a knas. So the Rabbanan essentially says, we can ask him, we find him. Rabbanan Savri, lo kansinan heter mishum yisrael. The Rabbanan, on the other hand, no. We don't penalize him for the permitted part of the debt because of the illegal part of the debt, because of the ribis. So the Gemara says, fine. Tanan Hassam, last short line of Osei. Tanan Hassam, shtari chov hamukdom psulim. So this is actually a very interesting halacha as well. So let's analyze this. We had a Mishnah that said that a shtar mukdom, is going to be possible. So we'll say, what's a shtar muktam? A shtar muktam is a document that is dated earlier than the actual transaction occurred. So for example, this could be in any case. This could be, I'm lending you money, and again, the loan is happening on the 10th of Kislev, but we date the shtar the 8th of Kislev. I will say, this case comes up actually very often. Now, where does it come up? This comes up, not as much this time of year, but very often during the summertime for weddings. You know, a ksuva is a note of indebtedness, right? A ksuva is a chov. So the problem is, not the problem, when a man writes a ksuva for his wife, that ksuva places a lien against his property. So the ideally is that the ksuva is supposed to be dated the same date as the chuppah. Well, sometimes during the summertime, you could have an evening wedding where, let's say, again, ksuva could technically be signed on one calendrical day, and the chuppah may be happening on a different day. So that, according to many poskim, actually causes certain halachic problems of a shtar muktam. You are creating an earlier lien than the actual date of the marriage. What's the problem with that, Rabbi Osai? The problem, of course, of creating earlier liens is that it could potentially allow the holder of the document to seize property illegally. In other words, if I lent you money on the 10th of Kislev, that's when I, as the lender, have the lien as of the 10th. If the document is dated the 8th, that gives me the ability to collect property, encumbered property, 2 days earlier than the actual transaction, and that's illegal. I don't have a lien as of the 8th. That's called a shtar muktam. So therefore, the Gemara says, chov muktamin psulin. So we'll say, therefore, shtar chov muktam psulin. A shtar chov, a document that is predated, is going to be possible. V'ham u'charin k'sherin. But we'll say, if people choose to post-date a document, that's totally legal. Because what does post-dating do? Post-dating defers the lien on encumbered property. Now, if I, as the lender, choose to do that, meaning if I'm willing to go ahead and essentially delay my lien, that's my prerogative. If I agree to that, then I agree to that. So the Gemara says, "Smukdam and I psulin." So why is the shtar mukdam, a predated document, going to be possible? Nehi delo gavu mizman rishon nigvu mizman sheni. Okay, even if I understand that you can't collect from the date as written in the shtar, but why can't you at least use it to collect from the date that you know the transaction occurred? So in reality, this is a machlokis, Rabbi Meir he. And ultimately, this Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Meir. Because we're remembering it, what does Rabbi Meir say? Rabbi Meir said, anytime you do something illegal with the shtar, what happens? There's a knas, there's a penalty. And the penalty is, you can't even use it to collect in a legal fashion. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Amar, no. I feel Timur Rabban. It's not true. Even the Rabban would agree, Rabbi Osai, that a shtar muktam is going to be possible. You know why? Gezeira Shema Yigve Mizman Arishon. Out of a concern that the lender may come to actually try to collect on the first day. In other words, both sides, what the Gemara is saying is the following. Is there are certain shtaros that we don't allow you to hold on to because we don't trust you to utilize it correctly. So if somebody has, so again, I lent Reuven money on the 10th of Kislev, but we date the document as of the 8th of Kislev. So I give Reuven my word, I'm only going to use it to collect from properties that were sold from 10th of Kislev and on. What does the halacha say to that? That's very nice that you promised that. That's wonderful. We don't trust you. Because at the end of the day, A, sometimes people just forget something. It's not even malicious. And B, you have a document. Remember, again, the chab of a document is it creates a reality. So we can't allow you to hold on to such a document because we're concerned that even if you say you're not going to use it from the earlier date, you'll come to use it from the earlier date. Ho gavra, dimashkin le pardes lechavre. So we'll say there was a man. Now listen to this. So understand. So we have over here is a fundamental machlokes of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. If I have a shtar that has ribbis written into it, so even though I know I can't collect ribbis, can I use that shtar to collect principal? That's the fundamental question we are dealing with now. Rabbi Meir says no. Chachamim say yes. Rabbi Meir says no only because it's a knas. It's a penalty. There's not a deeper halachic reason over here other than this is a rabbinic penalty for engaging in interest transactions. Now the Gemara tells a story. Listen to this. Hu gavra demashkin le pardes lechav. It's really very interesting. There was a man who borrowed money. So we'll call him borrower. So borrower borrowed money from lender. And what happened? Demashkin le pardes lechav. And the borrower collateralized his pardes, his orchard. Okay, so he gave the orchard as collateral to the lender. Achla tlas shani. So what happens? The loan's outstanding for a couple of years. And meanwhile, the lender is using the orchard. Literally, he's consuming the fruits of the orchard. Amrle, im zabnis le nehele mutav. So finally, we'll say what happens. So the lender comes to the bar and he says like this, here's the deal. You're going to pay me back the debt, but I also want to buy this orchard. And I'm not really giving you a choice. You have to sell it to me. If you sell it to me, good. Ve'ilo, if you don't sell it to me, kavishna lo lishtar mashkanta, I will hide the collateral document, or else I'll hide my loan document. Va'amina lekucha hi biyadi, and I will claim that I own it. I purchased this land. I will say, now this case works for a couple of reasons. Number one, because obviously the value of, now obviously if he hides the loan document, if the lender hides the loan document, then what? He can't collect, remember, he can't collect the loan. So obviously talking about a case where the value of the orchard far surpasses the loan, he's willing to forego the value of the loan. What's his chap? His chap is that he has been sitting on that property, using that property for 3 years. As we will learn again, good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. As we will learn again, 3 years is the shear for chazakah. 3 years is the year. So what does he do? Here's his chap. His chap is, I'll hide the document. I'll claim that I purchased it. I can't find my document to purchase, but it's okay that I can't find my document to purchase. Why? I've been using it for 3 years. So essentially what he's doing is he's extorting the orchard from the borrower. You're still going to pay me back. Here's the deal. If you pay me back, I'm willing to purchase the orchard from you. If you're not willing to sell me the orchard, then lemaisa, again, I'm just going to forget about the loan, and I'm going to claim that I own it, and the years of chazak will back up my claim. So I say, so what is this? So what does the borrower do? Listen to this. It's actually quite interesting. So azal kam akne libno hakatam. So what happens? I'll say, what occurs over here? So the borrower really has very little choice. So what does he do? So the borrower is the owner of the orchard, goes and gives over the orchard to his son who's the katan, as a gift. So we'll say, remember, this goes back to what we saw before. A katan does have the ability to be zochen something, right? Zechiah works by a katan, so he conveys it over to his minor son as a gift. Okay, so we'll say, what's his chap over here? His chap over here is that really what's going to end up happening is the next day when they sit down to drop the document of the sale will be void. Why? Because the borrower no longer actually owns the vineyard, right? You know, or the orchard. You know, vineyard, really. I'm sorry, can't be the vineyard. He no longer owns the vineyard. So what he's doing is he's saying to the lender, you want to go ahead and extort me? Well, I'm going to show you, because I'll go through the motions of selling you the vineyard, but at the end of the day, it's going to turn out that I'm not really the owner to sell it. I gifted it over to my minor son. The sale's going to be void, and the vineyard is going to still stay in my family. So what happens? Well, so come, so sure enough, they do this. He gifts it to his minor son. Then the next day, he quote-unquote sells it to the lender. So the Gemara says like this, Zvini vadai lohavi. Lohavizvinis. So it goes without saying that the sale is a void sale. Why is the sale a void sale? Because most, you know, klal gadol in sales 101, you can't sell something that is not yours. Right? You can't sell something that's not yours. So therefore, again, the sale's certainly not good, because at the time when the transaction occurred, the borrower no longer owned that collateralized vineyard. So says the Gemara, however, Zuze kemava bishtar damu, the government of chasim mishubadim, Odilma kimilva al pedamu ve in the government's chashvelep. Oh, so listen to the shaila. So now remember again. So borrower sold the land to the lender. Then it turns out that what the sale was void. So we'll say, so what happens? Remember again, borrower got money for the sale of that vineyard. So obviously now that it turns out that the sale was a void sale, the borrower has to return the sale money to the lender. Here's the shaila. What's the nature? So therefore, again, now what we're dealing over here is the borrower actually has two debts to the lender. What are the two debts? So the first is the money that he borrowed, whatever that transaction was. The second is now the money that he owes back to the seller for the supposed sale of the vineyard, which never actually took place. So the shaila now is for that second debt. So is this considered to be a debt that is backed up by a shtar or not? In other words, how do we view that shtar of sale? Is that a valid shtar that would allow... So you're supposed to say, here's the chap. Remember, I said before, when you lend money with the shtar, that allows you, the lender, to collect from encumbered properties. When you lend money verbally, you cannot collect from encumbered properties. So now, again, how do we view this second debt that the borrower owes the lender? Is it considered to be a debt that is backed up by a shtar, and therefore the lender could collect from encumbered properties? Or we say, no, since the shtar was just void altogether, therefore what? It's considered to be like a verbal loan, and therefore it can only collect from the chasim she'enam mishubadim. I'm sorry? It is a mekach tos, but the money still has to be returned. So correct. That's the shaila. There's no shtar outs the sale, but is the shtar enough to say money changed hands? Right? The shtar actually, remember, the shtar says two things. The shtar says, I, borrower, owner of the vineyard, am transferring ownership of the vineyard to lender, the purchaser. And also lender is giving borrower / seller X number of dollars of purchase. So granted, the sale part of the document is void. The shaila is now from the money perspective, is this considered to be a debt that is secured by a document or not? Amazing. Amar Abaye, Valav Hainad Rabbi Asi. Is this not the case of Rabbi Asi? Dam Rabbi Asi, Amadeus. Rabbi Asi says, Mode Bishtar Shekasu, Enasarach Lakaimo, the government of Chasim Mishubadim. I will say, so remember again, Rabbi Asi was of the opinion that I will say, if you have a case of, let's say again, a borrower who admits to a document, the borrower admits, this document was written by I am a party to this transaction, this document is fair, this document is accurate, there is no need, in utzarach lekaimo, the government of chasim mishubadim. So we'll say in a case like that, there is no need for independent corroboration of the document, and therefore again, the holder of the document could collect from encumbered properties. So we'll say in this case as well, remember in this case as well, the borrower, who was the owner of the vineyard, admits that what? Admits that he received the monies from the lender slash purchaser. So therefore, is that not the same? He's being moda to the fact that he owes the money, which should be hoda to the authenticity of the shtar, at least for this part. And therefore, again, the lender slash purchaser should be able to go ahead and collect the money from the chasim mishubadim. To which the Gemara says, Amalei Rava, no. Me, Dami, how can you compare the cases? Hasam nitan likasev. So both in the case that Ravasi quoted, we're talking about a debt or a transaction that is fit to be recorded. Haha, lo nitan li kasev. We'll say in our case over here of the sale of the vineyard, that transaction has never been recorded. Why should it never been recorded? Because we're supposed to remember again, the borrower slash seller never had the right to sell the vineyard in the first place. Because remember again, he had previously gifted it to his son. Meremar was sitting and he was reviewing this particular teaching. Amrali Ravina the Ramema, the Mereimar, Elahada Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Gezera Shema Yigba Mizman Vishon. So let's remember again, go back for just a moment. The Braisa said before that you cannot use a shtar muktam, that you cannot use a predated document. Cannot use a predated document. So why is that? Because we were concerned that even if the lender agrees to only collect from the earlier, from the actual date, not from the written date, we don't trust them. We're going to say you might come to go ahead and collect from the earlier date. Why don't we give a different reason? Nema lo nitan likasev. Why don't we say Rabosai, that's what? It should have never been written in the first place. And any document that should have never been written in the first place cannot be used for collection purposes. Amrali, he says, you can't compare that. Hachi hashta, hasam nihid lo nitan likasev misman rishon, aval nitan likasev misman sheni. Rabosai, you can't compare it. In the case of the shtar muktam, Rabosai, you're talking about a transaction that was a legal transaction that had every single right to be recorded. The difference just is it was recorded in the wrong way. So that halacha lo nitan likasev kal. Rabosai, this case of the vineyard, that transaction should have never been written to begin with. Why? Because Rabosai, remember again, because the seller was selling a vineyard that was not his property. Elahad desayin. Rabosai, that which we learned before. The shevach karkos ketsad. Remember, how do you collect for land improvements? Hari shegazel sal mechaver. Rabosai, listen to this case. I steal a field from my friend, machra la'acher, and I sell it to another person. So I steal a field from Reuven, and I sell it to Shimon. And what happens? Vishbicha, Shimon improves the land. Vahari hi yozeis mitachas yado. And what's going to happen at some point in time? Reuven's going to find out that Shimon has this field. Reuven's going to go take it from Shimon. What's going to happen? Shimon's going to come back to me, the seller of the field, and say, hey, make me whole. Kishu gove, when Shimon collects for his loss, Govas Akarman Khasim Mishubadim. Bose, he has the right to collect the principal from my encumbered properties. Vishevach Govam Minachasim Benechorin. But ultimately for land improvements, he can only collect from my unencumbered properties. Says the Gemara, I don't understand. Neima lo nitan likasev. We will say, even for the Karen, we should say that what? That Shimon doesn't have any right to collect from encumbered properties. Why? Because we should make this as if it was a verbal transaction, because the document is totally worthless. Why is the document totally worthless? Because a document like this should have never written to begin with. Why should it never written to begin with? Why, Rabosai? Because I never owned the land. It was stolen property. So the transaction itself was illegal from the beginning, should have never been recorded in a shtar. If that's the case, the debt that I owe to Reuven is what? A milva alpeh, a verbal transaction. If it's a verbal transaction, then you can only collect from the chasim nechor, not from the chasim mishubadim. To which the Gemara says, neima lo nitan likasev. Hachi hashta hasam. So I'll tell you why this case is different. Even Madar Nechaleh Bo Mikre Gazlan. So we'll say, so it could be, interestingly enough, that it's in my best interest, I'm the thief, it's in my best interest to allow for the aggrieved party, the victim, in this case, which was Shimon, who was sold stolen property, to allow him to collect from my encumbered property, why Rabosai, in order that I not be called a thief. In other words, if Shimon comes back and he collects from my unencumbered property, so we'll say, what does that tell everybody? What that tells everybody was the shtar was fraudulent. The shtar was fraudulent, why? Because I sold him stolen property. If I sold him stolen property, then I both say, then what does that make me? That makes me a thief. Therefore, sometimes, in an effort to salvage my reputation, it may actually be in my best interest to allow him, the aggrieved party, to collect from my encumbered property, even though that puts me at a disadvantage, in order to salvage my reputation. So the Gemara says, either mandar nechale de lekom behemenusa mefayes le lemare umokim le lishtare. But the other possibility is sometimes it is important, even for a thief, to have some level of credibility. He will go out of his way to go ahead and work things out with the original victim, with Reuven, in order that Shimon could go ahead and hold on to the property. Hacha lavrucha mine kamechavim shtar mekayamei. Rabbi say, in this case over here of the vineyard, the whole point of this transaction was what? To go ahead and prevent the lender from extorting the vineyard ultimately again from the borrower, and therefore, again, he has no interest in ultimately upholding the shtar. So again, remember how we got to this whole mess. We got to this whole mess over here because we were dealing with a very seemingly simple question. Simple question, which was what Rabbi Osai, let's actually work backwards. So what happens in that case? Let's not work backwards. Let's go forward. So remember again, we began with a machlokis about the shtar sheyesh bo. Rabbi Osai, this is actually very lemaisa because this happens all of the time. It happens all the time often with people just who are not knowledgeable about the halacha and then become knowledgeable about the halacha. I lent Reuven money with interest. Very simple case. Straight out. I lent the money with Ribis. I'm going to lend you $10,000, and I'm going to charge you an extra $50 of interest a month. Clear. So we'll say, so obviously the collection of the Ribis is illegal. What about the shtar? So obviously the shtar is not good to collect the Ribis. Is the shtar good to collect the principal or not? So Macholik Shaymer, the Chara Meir says, no, Kinas. Chum says, so we'll say, how do we paraskin? It passed like the Chachamim. Namely, that if you have a shtar sheyesh bo ribis, although the shtar cannot be used to collect the interest, the shtar absolutely can be used to go ahead and collect the principal amount. Vosai, in the case of the vineyard, how do we paskin? So in a case like this, lemaisa, again, because this transaction is totally void from the beginning, a shtar like that will not be good at all. And therefore, again, in that case of the vineyard, although the seller will owe the purchaser, the seller slash borrower, will owe the purchaser slash lender money, that is considered to be as if it is a verbal debt, and therefore, again, it is only secured by Nechasim and Echorin, not by Nechasim and Shibadim. Amazing halacha. Says the Mishnah.
The margin deal with the original Shibud that was created by the loan, isn't that still going to be collected from the Shibadim?
Correct. The original loan can be collected from the Chasimish. Correct. Loan one is collected from encumbered property. Loan two, which is the money that ultimately was paid for the vineyard, is collected from the Chasim and Nechor. Two different debts.
But ultimately, the land that was given as a matana, that should still be susceptible
to. Oh, no. So now that's a different question. So what happened to the lien? What happened to the lien once the individual gifted the property ultimately to the son? So technically speaking, so the way this could. All right. You know, Gil, this is complicated enough. You know, I don't have to make this right. Just to add one layer of complication, so Gil is saying good. So we'll say, remember, again, let's just play this out in the vineyard case. I borrowed money from Reuven. Let's just make it me. I borrowed money from Reuven. I pledged my vineyard as collateral. Fine. Reuven tried to extort the vineyard from me to buy it from me. I gifted the vineyard to my son. Remember, we'll say, even when I gift the vineyard to my son, that original lien is still there. technically speaking, if I default on the first loan, so technically speaking, the creditor could come after the gift I gave to my son and seize collateralized property. Correct. So at the end of the day, in the event of full loan default, technically, the original lender could still end up with possession of the vineyard. That is correct. That could still unfold over here. So says the Mishnah. You happy now? Yeah, you happy? All right, good. So it says in the Mishnah, saying Foskin Alfia. So back a little bit to forward contracts. So back a little bit more towards forward contracts. So both say, remember again, Psika Alaperos. So remember again, one of the things we spoke about, that in order to go ahead and create the Psika Alaperos, a forward future contract for produce, so remember again, there are a couple of criteria that we discussed. Either Yeshlo, right, the merchant has the actual item in stock, in which case, again, it's as if I'm actively buying an item right now, or Yatsa Shar, the price is already established. So say this is what this mission is going to focus on. In post-Kanal Peros, Ad Sheyitze Ashar. So we'll say you cannot create a forward transaction, a future transaction for this. So we'll say, again, remember, just to clarify, just to remind everyone, this is talking about a case where I'm paying for produce, but what? Not taking possession of anything now. So I'm going ahead and I'm purchasing a right to collect something in the future, but we're establishing the price now. The issue comes up, of course, is if what? Is if lamaisa, again, fluctuation of price. That's where we get into ribis issues. So in post-kinal aperos, achiyitze ashar. So let's say you can only go ahead and engage in a future transaction for produce if the market price has been set. Yotza ashar, post-kin. Once the price has been set, so we can enter into a forward, a future transaction. So we'll say this is true even if the merchant who I'm purchasing from does not have the produce on hand. Why? Because even though he doesn't have it, yesh lozeh, someone else has. In other words, we'll say that we assume that even though the merchant himself doesn't have the produce in stock, he could easily procure it from someone else, and because he can get it from someone else, it's as if he already has it. So the Gemara says, "Hayu tchila lekotrim." So let's listen to this. Let's say, however, the merchant or the vet, not the merchant, but let's say the seller that I am buying from, he's tchila lekotrim. We'll say he's the first person to have produce. Now the chap over here, because he's the first person to have produce, we'll say what's happened. There is not yet a marketplace. In other words, I'm buying it. I'm buying the produce early on, so there's not yet a market price. So what happens? Posek imo ala godish. V'ala ovet shalav anovim, v'ala ma'aton shal zesim, v'ala beitzim shal yoser, v'ala sid misheshako b'kifsha. So we'll say, so what's talach? Actually, let me not read all of that. So what happens if he's the first? So we'll say, as long as he has produce in his granary, literally, posikimo ala godish, he has stuff in his threshing floor, in his silo, so as long as he has produce, I could contract with him. In other words, we'll say, that's essentially saying yeshlo. As long as he has produce, even if the market price has not yet been set, I can enter into a forward transaction because since he has the produce, then what? I have the ability to contract with him because it's as if I'm actively taking possession of the produce right now. And it's the same idea. It's not just about wheat. Same thing if I'm contracting to buy wine or to buy grapes, even if the market price is not yet set, but he has the actual produce. He has the actual produce in stock, or ma'atan shal zeisim. Ma'atan shal zeisim is a vat of olives, or beitzim shal yotzer. We'll say beitzim shal yotzer was, yotzer is a potter. If somebody was a potter, what they used to have is they had balls of clay. So let's say I was contracting to purchase something from the potter. He doesn't have the item, but what? He's got the balls of clay. So lemaisa, again, it's as if the item in certain respect is already in existence. I could create future forward contracts with these vendors as long as they have the item itself, or at least in some form, in stock. Similarly, again, va'ala sid mishaka b'kivshan, I could purchase, we'll say, sid is like lime or plaster. Once the raw materials are put into the kivshan, to the oven, to make them, it's as if they exist, and I can create a forward-future contract. Uposek imo al hazevel. And I will say, the one thing that you could always buy is manure. One thing you could always find a lot of, right, is manure. So therefore, again, I will say, I'm sorry? Yeah, don't comment on this, right? There's not like a deeper metaphorical idea, right? This is just saying there's always a lot of manure around. So says the Gemara, so the idea over here is What the Gemara is pointing out of Rav Hosai is that obviously certain items are seasonal. Menorah is not seasonal. So the idea over here is it's always considered to be Yotza Hashar, right? It's always considered to be that there's always a market price. Therefore, you can always buy it. Posekimo ala zevel, kol yimos hashana. You can buy menorah all year round. Look at Rashi. Actually, no, not yet, not yet. So the Gemara is Rabbi Yossi Omer, ein poskin ala zevel. So here's what's interesting. Tanakama seems to say that you can enter into a forward future contract regarding manure any time of the year, and even if the person who you're buying from doesn't have manure. Why? What's the logic? The logic? It's available. It's available. So even if he doesn't, even if the person you're buying it from doesn't have it right now, it is readily available. So says the Chum say, no, no, no. The Chum say, excuse me, Rabbi Yossi says, you can't engage in a forward future contract for manure unless, of course, what? The seller actively has it in stock. What's the Gemara? It says, the Chum say, no, that it's mutter. Even if he doesn't have it in stock. Oposek imo, bishar ha-gavon. Rabbi Yossi says, it's actually very interesting. Now, Locha is going to be in the Mishnah. That when you purchase, obviously, when you purchase produce, or any item for that matter, in a forward future contract, excuse me, thank you, in a forward future contract, so we'll say the Mishnah says that you could go ahead and set up the transaction, kishar hagavoa. Now we'll say, now shar hagavoa sounds like the higher price, but it actually means just the opposite. Look at Rashi, it's the last two short lines in Rashi, uposek imo kishar hagavoa, im yifchos hashar mimashu achshav. If the price goes down than what it is now, so titein li, first white line, titein li kashar hazol, shara gavoa, haynu bezol, shenosten peros harbi b'dan b'gata. So also listen to this. The halacha is, when you go, the Mishnah suggests, that when you go ahead and you engage in forward future contracts, the halacha is, the buyer always has the right to say, that in the event that the price goes down, price goes down. Once again, remember, price goes down, I can get more product for the same dollar. I reserve the right to renegotiate the terms. In other words, that a forward future contract cannot bind me in the event that the price goes down and I can get more product. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda says, even if I did not explicitly articulate this tonight, Yachalomar teinli kazeh o teinli esma osi. So Yehuda says, even if I did not explicitly contract and say that in the event that the price goes down, I want to take my produce in accordance with the new financial reality. Even if I didn't say that, Yehuda says, at the time when I come to take possession of the produce, what can I say to the seller? He says, listen, here's the deal. Either give me produce in accordance with current market values, or what? Give me back my money. Rabbi Yehuda says that's the right that a buyer has in every single transaction. So says the Gemara. Now here's what's interesting. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says tinli kaze o tinli maosi. So Bosa, listen to this. This is amazing. Shailo mashach. Because remember, in this case over here, no mashicha has been done. I've never taken possession of any produce. Watch this. V'yochol achzerbo va'filu misha para leka. What's the Kudrashi says? Remember again, we're doing about Mishapara? So even though we said that at the end of the day, even though I only acquire an object with Mashiach, and not through giving money, but once you give your money, you can't back out of a sale. And if you back out of a sale after money has been tendered, then what? You are subject to a Mishapara, right? You're subject to a particular curse. There's no Mishapara over here. Why? Asura zula pasik. So, Bosa, listen to this. There's no mishapara here either. Why is there no mishapara? Because since Bosa, my intention was to give the money now, but to take the produce later. And it's always understood in every transaction for produce that if the value of the produce dramatically changes and it goes down in value, then I want to be able to chaperain over here, and I want to be able to go ahead and get the maximum amount of produce. Bosa, because that's understood, it's not just implicit; it's explicit in every transaction. Therefore, there's no mishapara involved over here. Again, we'll get into the details of this a little bit later on. But we'll say this is actually quite dramatic, because essentially what we're saying is these future forward transactions protect the buyer. They protect the buyer. In other words, should produce become more expensive, I have the ability to have locked in a lower rate. But should produce become less expensive, I have the ability to capitalize on that new lower rate now. Either way, I, as the buyer, am protected. And the Chiddush over here is Rabbi Yehuda says, even if I did not explicitly articulate this, nevertheless, again, this benefit is mine. Says the Gemara, Amar Abasi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein poskin al hashar shebeshok. Rabbi Yochanan said, in Rabbi Yossi, both say, you cannot go ahead and affect transactions, that will do one line, affect transactions based on the price in the shok. Says the Gemara, what does that mean? Amar Rabbi Basi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Afilu kidormus, is that true even if the price has been set in the central marketplace? Amarle, lo. He said, no. If the price was set in the central marketplace, then that is the price that governs transactions. What did I mean? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ela b'shuk shel ayoros, delo kvi'i tarayu. I meant that once the prices have been set in the smaller village marketplaces, that is not enough of a setting of a price for transactional purposes. So actually we'll have to stop over here. We'll stop Uleman Deslak. I'm going to record a little bit more of this a little bit later today. We'll start a little bit further down the daf in Meretz Hashem tomorrow.